Good day to you, and welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman, and you know what? I am so happy to be joining you today. That is every time I get the chance to do a podcast, you know, talking about the Grizzlies, team that I love to cover, love to watch, whatever it may be. But it just, there's a little bit of extra energy today, and after that game, you know, beating the Heat, sticking it to Iguodala, it just was an awesome game. Yeah, I can't remember a time to where the Grizzlies, you know, there was just such clear things they needed to work on or improve after their game versus the Rockets, and they checked every box against the Heat. And that is such a confidence builder, you know, going forward, you know, as they get ready for Friday against the Trailblazers. But we'll get to all that in just a second. Obviously, again, can't thank you enough for joining us. We're joining you on July 28th, the Tuesday edition of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name's Sean Coleman, regular co-host Mark King. We'll be back with us soon. We'll have some guests this week, have some previews. We're ramping up our efforts as the Grizzlies are as well. Hopefully, we'll be as effective as our efforts as the Grizzlies were today. Want to remind you, you can obviously follow the show at Locked On Grizz on Twitter, myself at StatsSAC, Mark at King_producer. Interact with us, talk with us. If you're someone who, you know, would like to promote a cause or, you know, your profession on the show, let us know. You know, we'll be glad to talk with you and see if there's something that makes sense. But on today's episode, going to do some reflections on the three scrimmages that the Grizzlies have completed. They went 1-2. We'll talk about the Heat's scrimmage specifically in this first segment. In the second segment, going to look a little bit at the Grizzlies' offense. You know, a lot of people know what they're good at, but against a very tough defensive schedule in the bubble, what if those options are kind of silenced a little bit, but they're kind of contained? How else can the Grizzlies find consistent offense? We'll discuss some ways they can do that. And then in the third segment, going to talk a little bit more about some individual Grizzlies who can add positive value to their present and future roles with the team with the opportunity that Orlando presents. But yeah, let's dive right into the game against the Heat. Obviously, the Grizzlies came out victorious, 128 to 101, and, you know, kind of like the 76ers did against us on last Friday. That's what the Grizzlies were able to do against the Heat. Back and forth game early, but then that late first quarter, second quarter run, you know, some pretty cool combinations that we saw. I know a lot of people are excited about the Jaw, Melton, Clark, Jaren, that foursome with the small forward added in, maybe Dylan, maybe Anderson. I know a lot of people like that lineup. That lineup was featured a little bit, but you saw some different variations of our second and first units put together. I know several of our perimeter second unit players played with Jonas for a stretch there in that end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter setup. But overall, the Grizzlies just took over, and they didn't look back. After the Rockets game, we had talked about, you know, the Grizzlies need to be more emotional on offense. We need to see more activity on defense. There needs to be more purpose in their movement, and all that was there. But let's not overlook the biggest development that has occurred. For one, and we'll get into this more specifically in the second and third segment, for one, though, it's the sources of shooting. First off, Dylan. Dylan was on tonight. And of course, as we know, when Dylan's on, I believe we're 18-4 when he has 20 or more points this season. When Dylan's on, it adds that other wrinkle that just has to make our offense more respectable to defenses. So he was on. But the shooting of Grayson Allen and Kyle Anderson and DeAnthony Melton, Ja, everyone was making threes. You know, at the end of the day, we took 42 threes and made 19 of them. That's still a 45% clip. We're probably not going to shoot that good all the time. But more importantly than that, it was the looks that these guys were getting. For Kyle Anderson specifically, it was the catch and three shoot. The Grizzlies did a phenomenal job in this game of setting up catch and shoot opportunities, and it worked out well. Either that or they made good decisions on, you know, spot up threes. There was just very good decision making on the shot selection from deep for the Grizzlies. Yes, the Grizzlies did have some opportunities within the paint, but there was just more direction. It was more clear in this game than I can remember in a while, even going back, you know, before the All-Star break. I cannot remember a game in which the Grizzlies just had such successful purpose with their passes, with their game plan. They did exactly what we had mentioned. They used the paint to set up the outside, especially the corners, and they were able to find success on offense. And they were hard to stop. The Heat just had no chance. Anytime that the Heat got going offensively, the Grizzlies would match them to keep their 20-point or so lead. On defense, still, there were some questionable times in which the Grizzlies' defense was sagging too much. It felt like that there was just one, sometimes two, too many defenders that were sagging down low, crowding the basket, and the Heat would find an outlet pass and then would shoot the three. I know early in the game, I think the score was like 12 to 16. I think the Grizzlies were up 16 to 12, something like that. But the Heat had the ball in the lane. It was like one Heat player, it may have been Bam Adebayo, one Heat player versus four or five Grizzlies. Well, Adebayo was able to pass it out to the corner, and the Heat player was about to shoot the three. Well, Ja and Dillon both went after to try to block it, and they took themselves out of the play. The Heat rotated the ball around the perimeter. They were able to find a good shot and make it. Those are the type of things that the Grizzlies, they were running into a lot against the Rockets. Now, the Rockets, like we stated, they are historically good at taking advantage of that. But the Grizzlies have to stay disciplined, and as the game went along, they did. Yes, they probably crowded the paint a bit too much at times, but they eventually were able to get back out on the perimeter, and they were not flashing and wildly jumping and knocking themselves out of place. They were matching up on the Heat. Yes, the Heat still made some shots, but the Grizzlies made it tough on them. They made them earn their shots. So the perimeter game plan of the Grizzlies was just phenomenal in this game, and it was well executed, and that's exactly what the Grizzlies are going to have in place as they move forward. The bench unit was great as well. Grayson Allen, again, added value. Brandon Clark was his usual effective self. Just in general, Memphis from top to bottom played quite well, and that's the thing to take away from this. You know, myself, Mark, many others, we've talked about the Grizzlies' depth as being one of their big keys, one of their big, really big, strengths going into this. And through that, through their depth and versatility, the different lineups that they can, you know, make work, those are the type of things that are going to allow for them to overcome the talent difference between a lot of these teams. And we saw that today. Just several different new lineups that we had not seen before. I know that some of the lineups that statistically had been the most productive, I believe Taylor Jenkins and his staff had figured that out. They always knew that, but they're featuring those lineups a bit more now. And we're obviously seeing that there are improvements. We're seeing players add elements to their game. They may not reach a, you know, really high reliable level in Orlando. There's just too little of a span, too little of a sample size to make it truly, you know, trusting, but very encouraging signs that we'll talk about in a little bit that we saw in these scrimmages that were awesome to see. So just in general, just a great end to the scrimmage. You know, again, I had tweeted out that it just a big thing from it was that I truly feel if the Grizzlies played, especially like they did in the first half, in some of these games in the bubble, there's a good chance they go into the playoffs without having to worry about a play-in game. And the flow of progression, just the clear areas of improvement that were needed after the Rockets game, it just seems like each of those areas, the box was checked. So we know the Grizzlies are capable of doing it. We know that Memphis is going to be able to do these things, that they have the potential to do these things, even against good competition. It's just how consistently, you know, can they do it? A couple of other takeaways for Memphis was obviously, you know, 47% from the field and 45% from three, 29 assists. They took advantage of their free throws. Wasn't a lot of foul trouble that occurred. So just in general, just a very complete and satisfying effort to end the scrimmages and gain that victory before their game against Portland. So just overall, a great way to end the tune-up before the season starts. And I just can't think of a better confidence builder for this young team as they go into the games actually counting against Portland on Friday. What we're going to do is we're going to highlight a little bit of what the Grizzlies did well today and talk about their offense, talk about if the Grizzlies' known ways of success are kind of contained against these other teams in the bubble. How can the Grizzlies find ways to overcome that and stay consistent on offense? We'll be right back with you here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. So let's discuss offense. That's something that you usually don't hear, or that it's probably still, you're probably still having to get used to that from a Grizzlies podcast, but the truth is that this roster, the way that it's set up, it's more geared, this team is more geared towards its offensive potential, and that's when it is at its best. And statistics show that. When the Grizzlies get going offensively, they are at their best. They truly are a team that is among the best in the NBA. Just a few things to throw out there. I did a piece over at Grizzly Bear Blues recently where I talked about how through transition play and through production, through a significant portion of the game on both ends of the court happening early in the shot clock, when those things happen, the Grizzlies are successful. You know, Joe Mullinax and Parker Fleming over at Grizzly Bear Blues, they wrote about a few specific players like DeAnthony Melton, Josh Jackson, who are at their best. They're their most effective when they're playing in transition. But just a couple of things to throw out. So the Grizzlies, like for instance today, they scored more than 115 points, the first time that they did that in these scrimmages. When the Grizzlies score more than 115 points, they are 24-11 this season. Now, I can't remember a time, there never has really been a time where the Grizzlies regularly scored 115 points, but they did it in almost half their games this year. But when they score 115 or more points, they were 24-11. Now, most teams are going to have a good record when they're 100 when they score 115 points. But the frequency in which the Grizzlies did it was quite impressive, and that's when they play good. Another sign that they are a very good team when they play fast is the fact that when the Grizzlies force their opponents to take 96 or more shots, that is a sign that the Grizzlies are forcing their competition to play this version of the Grizzlies' style of basketball. The Grizzlies are 8-1 when they make their opposition shoot 96 or more shots. Now, I don't know how likely that's going to be in the bubble. There is a lot of disciplined, more advanced, more talented teams, just to be honest, that the Grizzlies will be playing. But overall, the whole purpose of those statistics is to show that when the Grizzlies can force their opposition to frequently play their style of basketball, they're going to have good success. And while that's known, while that goes for anyone, it's just how frequently can the Grizzlies do that? That's going to be a big focus for them. Another thing that, you know, kind of is, you know, a byproduct of, you know, these high-scoring shootouts is the Grizzlies' effectiveness early in the shot clock. If a shot is taken six or less seconds into the shot clock, the Grizzlies are a top-10 team both defensively, in terms of making life hard for their opposition to make shots or forcing shots. And when the Grizzlies take shots themselves, they're in the top 10 in the league at making them. The Grizzlies are truly one of the best teams in the NBA when there's a lot of activity early in the shot clock. And again, that just supports when the game is going fast. So the overall takeaway from these numbers is what's known. The Grizzlies play at their best offensively when they're in transition on the fast break, when they're going full throttle. They are top five in the league in fast break points. They're top five in they use transition, among the top five teams in the league. So when this team is out and running, when they're at fast pace, that's when they're at their best. Obviously, a big proponent of that is their guards. Tyus Jones, Ja Morant, one of the best 1-2 combinations in the game. And of course, Ja Morant, you know, specifically because of his ability to finish and all that. But the other big thing about the Grizzlies' offense is their ability to get into the paint. And that is the big, big focus for this Grizzlies' offense. And what do I mean by that? So when this Grizzlies team gets into the paint, that's when they have the most options to maximize their strategies and strengths. Again, this Grizzlies team, while they have been more impressive on offense than most thought, in terms of their actual individual talent, they're still more towards, you know, the bottom of the league. And when you look at them and you compare their roster to other rosters that are in the NBA, that just happens when you're the youngest team in the league. It's going to take time to develop that. But when the Grizzlies get into the paint, they are among the best teams in the league, and it's because of their resourcefulness. For one, it's the ability for the guards. The Grizzlies' guards are the most productive team in the paint in the NBA. A lot of it is because of their ability to shoot the floaters, get to the basket through Jaws finishing, make passes down low for easy shots for their bigs, and of course also the ability to pass. That's why the Grizzlies were second in the NBA in assists, and also their bench unit led the NBA in assists. But that paint production, it isn't just limited to the Grizzlies' guards. It also is the play of Jaren Jackson Jr. and Jonas Valanciunas being able to find good post-up matchups. The Grizzlies with Taylor Jenkins, we saw Jaren Jackson do it in some last year, but it's really popped this year with Jonas and Jaren at times. They will find a favorable matchup, immediately post up, get the ball low in the paint on the block, and have an easy scoring opportunity. That's how they find their success. With Brandon Clark, it's his intelligent footwork from the perimeter to the post where he's able to create space and get shots from a pass. But that's the thing about it, is that yes, when the Grizzlies are playing fast, they may be at their best. But other teams, there's some very good defensive teams they'll be facing in the bubble. The Pelicans lead the NBA in defending the three-pointers ever since Zion came back. And the Grizzlies also are going to be playing five of the 11 best defensive teams in the league once they play the Jazz, the Thunder, the Raptors, the Celtics, and the Bucks. So the Grizzlies' ability to establish their might, establish a consistent ability to get out on the run, it's going to be hard to do. Teams are going to focus on limiting that. They're going to focus on limiting Ja. They're also going to focus on Dillon, because they know that if Dillon is shooting, it's another wrinkle that they have to respect, and it makes things more complicated. But if they keep him from shooting, then the Grizzlies are going to have to find other ways to score. The way that the Grizzlies do that is by focusing on the paint. For one, it's getting in the paint and being able to hit their floaters. Brandon Clark, Tyus Jones, Jaren Jackson Jr. at times, Ja Morant, Dillon, all these guys have the ability to get into the paint and score on that floater. Jaren and Kyle Anderson have the ability to use their Euro step with their length to get close for a good shot. So the Grizzlies just have several different players who have different roles on the team who, when they get into the lane, they're resourceful enough to score. The other big portion besides the bigs getting the ball down low is if the Grizzlies can score in the paint. As you saw in the Heat game, what that does is it opens up opportunities on the perimeter. And that's how the Grizzlies overcome their lack of natural shooting talent, by finding open looks. We saw it so many times with Tolliver and Brandon Clark and Jaren and De'Anthony Melton and Kyle Anderson. You would see Ja and Dillon even and Tyus Jones be able to get into the lane when the defense collapsed. Quick outlet to the corner. The Grizzlies were so accurate from the corner. That's exactly how the Grizzlies can stay consistent scoring. Establish their ability to score in the paint and then make crisp passes out to the three-point land, especially in the corner, and allow for themselves to shoot the three. The other big thing that I took away from the Grizzlies' offense is the ability, like for instance, Grayson Allen, and you see Dillon it doing from time to time, you see Kyle doing it, just intelligent footwork. I talked about it on Sunday with Brandon Clark. Intelligent footwork, and we're not even talking about having to, you know, cover the entire arc or, you know, go a long way. Just in a small space, establish footwork to where you can create space for the shot. That's how you're able to create shot opportunities up at the top of the key. That's what opened up a few opportunities for Kyle and Grayson Allen in the game today. So that's how the Grizzlies are going to be able to find success. They're going to have to use their passing. Their passing is a clear asset. If the Grizzlies can't push the ball like they'd like to, they're going to have to play more half-court game. The ability to have success through that is intelligent passing, but it's also with having a purpose. If you are able to get into the lane like the Grizzlies can on a regular basis via passing down low or their guards adding pressure into the lane, score through that, that makes defense collapse, and then the Grizzlies can pass the ball out for open looks on the perimeter. So the Grizzlies passing and their ability to produce in the paint, that's something that they are very good at. And if they can stay consistently good at that, that should make for easier looks from the outside. And as the Grizzlies showed through Taylor Jenkins' game plan, that corner setup should definitely be there. And if the Grizzlies can consistently hit those shots, they're going to find themselves in a good position to stay with many of these more talented teams offensively. So again, just the passing and the paint production, those are the two things that the Grizzlies clearly have as strengths. If their ability to push the ball and their ability to get out on the run is limited, Jaw is limited, Dillon may be struggling to shoot. Once they get into the paint, If they can establish that, then they should have some outside opportunities to stay in games or to gain the lead. So just, we saw that on display. You saw if the Grizzlies can do those things, how crisp and efficient and effective, you know, they can be and how well they can play. And a lot of times if you're doing that, you're going to get 115 points or more. And as we mentioned earlier, that's when the Grizzlies are playing at their best. So just some ideas of how the Grizzlies can find success and find offensive resourcefulness. You know, if defense are able to stop one thing, it's best to have two or three other options to throw at them. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I talked about how the Grizzlies themselves can improve going forward against more talented teams based off their offense. In the third segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about how a few individual players now have an opportunity in front of them to add positive value to their current and future status with Memphis. We'll be right back with you on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. So obviously, if you were to ask me welcome back for this final segment of today's show. But if you were to ask me what member of the Grizzlies, in my opinion, is going to have the biggest opportunity to shine, my immediate response after watching these scrimmages is Taylor Jenkins. And why is that? Because you clearly can see that Jenkins has added value to his players' repertoires and players that we're seeing. The big takeaway from this scrimmage session is Dylan struggled in the first two games. Justice is no longer available. So that's your two starters and your two biggest outside shooting threats outside of Jaren that you hoped were going to add depth and wrinkle to your offense, but just through struggles, through injuries and ineffectiveness, were not able to. How did the Grizzlies combat that? They turned DeAnthony Melton, Kyle Anderson, Grayson Allen, even Ja, and Tyus Jones, they turn all of those guys into more frequent shooters who are shooting with confidence. Kyle Anderson is a tremendous value. If the Grizzlies are finding him on catch-and-shoot opportunities, he doesn't think, he just lets it fly. He adds that Dylan or Jaren mentality to his game, and if he's able to do that consistently, the Grizzlies have found something. And that's why, in my opinion, of the Grizzlies that could, you know, add the most positive impact to their present and future status with the team, Kyle Anderson stands out the most. And the reason why is because of this. Naturally, logically, and you could tell kind of how rotations have figured themselves out, as Josh Jackson entered the picture, it appeared that he was starting to gain preference with Taylor Jenkins and his staff, because just to be honest, Josh Jackson is the more effective player in transition. Taylor Jenkins wants to play in transition. So Josh Jackson just seems to be a better fit for Taylor Jenkins' system than Kyle Anderson. But, and because of that, it was thought that, you know, really, does Kyle Anderson have a future with the Grizzlies? He likely was viewed as being one of the more expendable pieces, potentially, you know, once we got past Orlando. We won't get into all that. That's what we're talking about after, you know, the bubble. But it's clear, though, that Taylor Jenkins, instead of just kind of letting Kyle do his own thing and letting stuff work out as it may, Jenkins has clearly been working with Anderson to make his style fits Kyle's style while also improving it, and that's his shooting. If Kyle Anderson can become any type of reliable shooter with his playmaking ability and defense, you have a 3-and-D player that is very valuable at his contract. And if that's the case, the added element of defense and playmaking and intelligence, those are some things that Kyle Anderson can throw into the mix that not a lot of other players can on the Grizzlies. So now this idea of him being expendable is not necessarily there. A lot of these players that I'm going to mention in this segment, the reason why they now have the opportunity that they do to add impact to their future with the Grizzlies is because Justice Winslow is injured. In terms of Kyle specifically, if Justice is injured, that adds to the growing list of injuries that he's had. He becomes less reliable to really pinpoint as a true productive starter for the majority of next season. It's just hard to trust him to do that. Well, if that's the case, Kyle Anderson is under contract for two more years. Josh Jackson, the Grizzlies are going to be limited on keeping him in the fold. So if Kyle Anderson can become a player that can shoot the ball on a regular basis, can be good in transition, and plus his playmaking and defensive ability, he's just got multiple ways that he can add value, and his contract becomes a bargain at that point. So yeah, while you could say he may be valuable to other teams, for a team like the Grizzlies who are trying to grow towards contention, Kyle Anderson with a shot is a player who can certainly get you there. So I think that the development of a shot for Kyle Anderson to go with all the other things that he does, I think the fact that he's probably going to be the most consistent starter for the Grizzlies with Winslow out, if he can show that he can be consistent with the shot, he becomes much more valuable for the Grizzlies in terms of remaining on the team and a big part of the rotation. Second player that I think, you know, gained some value from the Winslow injury and now have an opportunity is Josh Jackson. Now, I won't spend as much time on Jackson as I will Kyle Anderson because it's pretty simple to see what Jackson does. He's not a structured player. There's a lot of just natural slashing, running athleticism with Josh Jackson. He's good at an up-tempo pace. I think that he can be a difference maker against the Pelicans, for instance. But Josh Jackson is playing for his next NBA contract. He has been playing all year, and he did that. He did well by himself before the season was suspended. But if Josh Jackson can get out on the run, stay productive, his ability as a second unit defender where you don't, the overall quality in defense is not as good as it usually is, that's where he can shine on his next contract. So if Josh Jackson gets run, especially in the second unit, and can show value on both ends of the court, I think he plays himself into a very valuable contract in the near future. It may not be with the Grizzlies since they declined his option before the season. They're limited on how much they can sign him for, but for Josh Jackson personally, he can, you know, add to the likelihood that someone will outprice the Grizzlies, which, you know, benefits Jackson, you know, for the long term. The third person who I think definitely gains the opportunity to make, you know, his status, his stock rise is DeAnthony Melton. And DeAnthony Melton may be the person that gains the most from the Orlando opportunity. Now, in general, no matter what happens in Orlando, I feel that the Grizzlies are going, it remains very obvious they're going to do all they can to retain DeAnthony Melton once the season is over. However, we've already seen talk from other teams and, you know, speculation from other rebuilding teams that will have some cap space that they could put a price tag on Melton that makes it uncomfortable for the Grizzlies to match. Well, if Melton, just like Anderson, starts adding a shot to his repertoire to go in with his, you know, playmaking ability, his ability in transition, and obviously his defensive ability where he truly can make a difference. If now Melton adds a shot to his game, he becomes an all-around jack of all trades, maybe even to the point of a DeLon Wright, maybe even better than that, since, in my opinion, he's a better player than DeLon Wright. But what I'm getting at with Melton is that if you add a shot to all the other things that he does well, that is a tremendous value to have in today's game. And unlike Kyle Anderson, Melton is still only 21, about to be 22, I believe. He's very young and still has a lot of room to grow. But if he does that with a shot, that is one heck of a combo guard that could be a spot starter and truly make a difference on the bench like he did, you know, for the Grizzlies all year. It's no coincidence that when Melton started to emerge, that's when the Grizzlies bench became a true asset and made them, you know, one of the better teams in the NBA from December on until the suspension occurred. So with DeAnthony Melton, you know, with him being a restricted free agent, with him emerging as he had this year, he has the ability in terms of actual numbers to really boost his earnings potential, I think, against some good competition in Orlando. And finally, I think that the other player that who to me has shown a lot, who's answered a lot of questions, is Grayson Allen. Now, the Justice Winslow injury doesn't directly impact Allen as much as it does these other players. Because Anderson, Jackson, and Melton, because they play either play the same position as Winslow, or in terms of teams that they play, they could be a starting option. Allen is not as directly impacted as those other three are. But the reason why Allen gains an opportunity from Winslow is his Winslow is not an option, and other bench options now have to move into bigger roles, perhaps as starters. Minutes are there in the reserves, and Allen showed coming off the bench in the second game against the Rockets and the third game against the Heat, he can be productive. He's energy and intelligence. He showed the ability to offer great help defense today against the Heat. He created opportunities against the Rockets. He created shot opportunities from both the outside and at the basket against the Heat. Grayson Allen showed that he could contribute in quite a few ways, during those two games in the scrimmages. If he starts getting maybe 10 to 12 minutes a game and is productive, yes, the Grizzlies already have picked up his option for next year. But the reason why Allen can gain some clarity, some certainty, I talked about it in an article I wrote over at Grizzly Bear Blues this week, how he can gain some certainty for his present and future with the Grizzlies is if he's playing well, then the Grizzlies may become a little bit more okay with the idea of, you know, if Melton can't be resigned, or, you know, if for some reason they can't, you know, make it work with John Concher for the future. If Grayson Allen, since he's already under contract with the Grizzlies, can make the most of his opportunities, he becomes more important to keep. Because if Winslow is out with injury, then you've got, you know, Anderson and Gorgui Dieng, you may want to keep them more. Veteran presence, front court depth. That turns the expendable label to Allen. Well, if he's performing well, and the Grizzlies may not be able to keep both Melton and Concher, now you have a clear need for Allen. And you've also got proof that he can step up and play well against good competition. So Allen, with a good performance in Orlando, he may validate that he could be a key member of the Grizzlies' rotation. Even if it's not but 10 to 12 minutes a night, that's still important. And if Allen can step up in that role, he can do a lot for himself. So the big thing is that I recently stated that I feel like it's generally flawed to think that in a setting like Orlando, the overall opinion of a player's future could be altered. I don't think that's the case. But I do think that in the Grizzlies' position, where they, as a young team, and as a team many expected not to be here, they're playing with house money, and it's very easy for them to potentially exceed expectations again in Orlando. As they play these talented teams, and these four players that I mentioned have the ability to step up in bigger roles and perform well, all of them can add value to their present and futures, and especially if they're adding skills like Anderson and Melton's ability to shoot. If they can add that to their repertoire, they become much more valuable. And, you know, while the Grizzlies may not be able to reap the benefits of all of these players gaining positive value, it's definitely not a bad position to be in to have as many players continuing to improve as possible. So that's just another storyline to watch. You know that Ja and Jaren and Dylan and Jonas and Brandon Clark, Tyus, Justice, you know those guys are going to be around, but seeing progression and improvement of other guys that could be around in the future as well, either because they're already under contract or because when the Grizzlies were once thought to not need them, they do now. Seeing those guys improve, it's just another wrinkle. And that's why I think Taylor Jenkins can shine the most. If he can show that he can add to the repertoire of these players and up their level and thus the overall potential of the Grizzlies after losing one of his most dynamic players, I think that that's just one other valid reason to truly believe that, you know, Taylor Jenkins is a guy who can lead a contender, you know, hopefully to the promised land, but that, you know, Taylor Jenkins is the long-term answer for the Grizzlies. So, a lot of information to cover in this show. You may consider this reading too much into these scrimmages, but I do also think that there are plenty of opportunities. You know, life is going to be tough. It's going to be hard to truly succeed consistently with the talent the Grizzlies are going to be playing, but there also is plenty of positives to take away, especially from the Heat game and the way that the Grizzlies have progressed as they've played more together, both offensively and defensively. It just goes to show, as many have stated, that second training camp, the 2 or 3 weeks the Grizzlies have had to play together in Orlando, despite losing Justice, they really have added value to their ability as a team, to their chemistry, both individually and as a team. This Grizzlies team looks better than they ended last. They look better now than when they ended the season, and that's all that you can ask for from Taylor Jenkins and the players. So very exciting to see. As I stated, here over the next few days, Mark and I will both have some guests that we'll be looking forward to talking with, and we'll be back, especially on Friday. We'll be making sure we've got you prepared for the Portland game, all the news and notes that you'll need for that game, what to watch, and how the Grizzlies can get their bubble started off right in their pursuit of the playoffs. Thank you so much for joining me. Again, my name is Sean Coleman. Please reach out to me at StatsSAC and through Locked On Grizz, Mark at King_producer. Again, we always love hearing for you. Hope that you have a great day, and thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you here soon on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.